Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
March 10th, it's Mario Day, everybody.
It's like, did Ray Cash show up or what?
No, that's next week. Hello again, fellow basement dwellers. This is your good friend, Patrick O'Dowd, welcoming you into another edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Bandwagon Nerds is, of course, a part of the Chairshot Radio Network on thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
And make sure you head over to prowrestlingtees.com/chairshot to get all of your chair shot swag. Spend $20, get one of those dope designs, spend a few dollars more, get it soft style. Your giblets will thank you. You, of course, know I am not alone here on this bandwagon. You already heard the voice of the lawyer himself, David Ungar, asking if our good friend, the Reverend Raymond S. Cashington Esquire, the 377,292nd, was with us today. He is not. Mr. Saturday Night himself, PC Tunney, questioning the numbers.
No, I was just going to reach, reaching for the abacus, buddy.
You always get that at, well, we don't need an abacus because we have a scientist. That I bet he's good at the maths, Mr. DPP. Are you good at the maths?
Can I tell you a story about
computers for?
Can I tell you how good he is at the maths? His senior year of high school math, he corrected the teacher like the first week about a problem they did on the board, and he didn't have to do any more homework the rest of the year.
That's outstanding.
That's
a true story. I wasn't in that class, but I just know of that happened to him.
Sasha McFlippins can corroborate the story if we need to.
Fair. I passed my senior math class in high school.
What would you take?
It was like a pre-calc. It was literally just called senior math because I was an English guy. I was a literature guy. I was a reader. That was my jam. Not doing the maths. Didn't really care about the maths. I got a D+, and I was like Chris Farley and Tommy Boy. I was like, I got a D+.
This is why I became a lawyer, because I sucked at the math. Literally my calculus class in college was like a team that gets out to a big lead and then just holds on for dear life. Like the first half of the semester, I did really well. Then everything got hard in the second half. Like, all right, how many A's? How many A's offset how many F's so that I still get a D? That's how I passed. It counts.
So you did enough math to figure out how the grade would work but not enough math to actually pass the course. Played. That is done like a true nerd. Guys, I'm excited about this show because it gets us to the next show. And next week, at the end of this show, I'm going to make an announcement because we've got a special multi-week event coming your way, listeners. That's right. Very excited about it. We will share it at the end of the show. We'll also be back to watching Invincible, because Invincible Season 2, Part 2. So, DP, if you haven't caught up on your homework yet, you got a week, buddy. You caught up?
We are ready to rock and roll, baby.
I didn't listen to last week's show, by the way. Thanks for covering for me.
That explains why we're not getting raked over the coals, guys.
Actually, that's not true. I did listen to the show because you shit on Denzel Washington best supporting actor. And then we're like, I didn't shit on Denzel Washington.
I took such a dump on him, didn't I, guys?
You were like affronted that I didn't pick Heath Ledger. That's all I'm saying. It's like you were like, well, I don't see you.
All right, I get what you're saying. I mean, it was a good pick, but yeah, for our wheelhouse.
The dude. Okay.
Anyway, Patrick.
Civil War America, Denzel Washington getting whipped, single tear, looking into the camera. And you're like, that's fine. That's your answer. You K'd Denzel Washington, sir. You K'd Denzel Washington.
I may have undersold him. Yeah, see that.
You didn't just undersold. You know, sold worse than Vader on a WCW Saturday Night against the Squash match.
I think it's somewhere in between the two. That's what you did. I think it's somewhere in
between.
There's
a wrestling reference today. You shit on Denzel Washington. The name of this podcast is David Ungar Shits on Denzel Washington.
How about Mr.
Michael Jackson can sit on top of the world as long as he doesn't sit on the Beverly Palm Hotel. Oh, sorry.
A better title would be Mr. Unger Goes on Washington. You know, a little better play on that.
We'll see. Those two. You know?
Last week,
two on Washington.
Tutty, the title I had for the episode before I ran into all the problems in the hotel and you had to post it was so close to what you did. We really are besties, because my thing was going to be The Oscar Goes To, and yours was like, is like almost the exact same title.
There you go.
Anyway, whatever. We kicked off the show with a little bit of Mario music, because today is, as we're recording this, it is March 10th, affectionately known as Mario Day. And it's apropos that for this particular episode that it happens to be Mario Day, because there's a lot of video game interspersed throughout this show. We're going to talk about how Warner Brothers continues to suck and likes being the bad guy. We're going to talk about the passing of a video game icon, even though some of you may not know them as that video game icon. And we have a video game trailer that I know at least Dave is very excited about. Tony, what's up?
Do you have more Mario Brothers talk lined up?
Not particularly. Today's the day. Do you have something that you got to get off the chest with the Mario?
No, just a real quick thing I saw on Twitter or X this morning, and it looked like there's a rumor that there will be a Super Mario Brothers movie in 2026 to follow up the previous one. So we're going to get a second.
I unlike our good friend Aesop, enjoyed that film for what it was. He was really mad at that movie. Like, just mad.
Aesop subjects poor children to Madam Web. So come on.
I figure that all he does with his time when he's not doing comedy or going seeing shitty movies as a part of his job is that he watches the A24 Hub on HBO Max, like just on a loop.
On loop.
He just hits it, and if there was like a repeat function, like he'd hit shuffle and repeat, so you don't know what movie you're gonna get. He's always got an A24 movie going. I don't know. We do have quite a bit of a trailer park. I do think that instead of the bell, if we had like, you know, whether it was the one up noise or the coin noise.
Dan's got to have it.
The mushroom noise.
We will have all of that and more after the first commercial break for you. How's that sound?
I'm sure that's a point, but then nobody's going to be right the rest of the show. That's what's going to happen. We're going to get this all lined up, and then like nobody will say something bell worthy. And we'll have to do the one that is like, do, where you die. And you have to do the hand motion that Mario did when he died, where he like does this as he falls, as he flies into the air.
A pansy.
Who's been calling me a pansy? How?
That wasn't the right soundbite. That's funny.
That worked out well. Wow, I'm a little hurt now, man. We worked together before the show. I got a hold of you. Was like, hey, man, do you think you can dig up some Mario tunage?
Wow, come right out. Come right out and knock you down.
I should have gone to Tunny, man. I should have gone with Tunny.
Stick with old reliable, you know.
That's all right. All right. Well, we are going to head into the trailer park. We have an animated heavy trailer park today. But before we get into our wonderful world of animated features, we do need to play a little music. And I turn to David Ungar because I don't want Tony getting out the banjo and ask you, sir. Whoa.
I'm just licking my thumb to hit the button.
Whoa. I thought we put this to bed with other nerds. Don't do this. Don't make me actually have to try and make an effort on this podcast with sound. Hey, there it is. Because I'm lazy. I'm lazy. I'm the number one chair shot villain for a reason. It's not because I'm motivated. Anyway, let's make our way into the trailer park. Dave, play that beautiful banjo. All right, so we got a little bit, not a huge trailer park today, but a somewhat notable trailer park. This first movie, though, not really notable. At least I don't know that I feel is very notable. We did get our second trailer, though, for the Garfield movie, because why not? Intellectual properties exist, ergo, we should make them into films, because production companies, they hate audiences. That's what I've decided is the truth. Here's my big problem. So Chris Pratt is apparently voicing the titular character. No Bill Murray, like everybody hopes. Bill Murray had his run with Garfield, and that was probably enough. But one, they didn't release the trailer on a Monday. It doesn't look like the premiere of the film will happen on a Monday. So what are we even doing here? And two, why are we sending Garfield on what appears to be some wildcat adventure with his father? This is I have questions. This isn't Odie. There's Odie, but it's not like Garfield being sarcastic and mean to everyone. It's him like rising above his father. So I'm very, very confused. And I used to enjoy the Jim Davis comic strip. I used to read it in the Funny Pages back when Funny Pages existed. But man, Garfield movie, did we need this? Did we want this? Will it make any money? I ask all of these questions to the lawyer.
Did we want this? Probably not. Did we need this? Absolutely not. Will it make money? Probably, with the kids, you know, that sort of thing. I was never a big Garfield fan, you know, that sort of thing. I like the comic strip just fine. You know, it was one of the ones buried amongst all the other ones. But, you know, I think it would be better if we had Chris Pratt voicing Garfield than Chris Pratt. But that's just me, you know. This is the epitome of K for me, this trailer and this franchise. Like, fine. I hope the kids enjoy it. I don't think, not even Square X or what, Smell X, whatever that platform that Tunney talks about, is going to get me into the theater for this one. It's our running joke, theater. PC Tunney. We always make fun of that.
The X Cube Theater, Tunney, would the X Cube Theater get you to see Garfield?
I'm not going to go see it in theaters. It looks really cool telling of the tale, though. I like it. I'm interested. I like that kind of animation that they're using, too. And, like, when do you ever start Garfield before with an origin story? So it's something different. And I, too, love lasagna a lot.
I do, too. But do we need a Garfield movie? TP, do we need a Garfield movie?
To be honest, I didn't think Garfield was still relevant. Like, do the kids still watch or read Garfield or anything, like, to make it, like, worthy of needing a movie?
No, here's what I remember. Do you guys remember when the Garfield compilation books of, like, the comic strips, they used to come in, the books were, like, oddly shaped. They were, like, rectangles. They didn't look really square. Paperback books. There were, like, 15 to 30 some volumes of them. My parents used to have Garfield comics all the time. And I used to, that's how I became, you know, how I knew about Garfield was because of these, like, books and strips. That's, like, where I read and learned about it. I got to say, for a movie that I have no interest in seeing, they got some names for this film. I mean, Chris Pratt is Garfield. Samuel L. Jackson, I'm assuming Vic is his father. Hannah Waddington is voicing a character named Jinx. Ving Rhames, Nicholas Holt, that's right. Lex Luthor himself is voicing John Arbuckle. Cecily Strong, Harvey Guillen, Brett Goldstein, Bowen Yang, Snoop Dogg voicing Snoop Cat. Sniggity diggity. That's what we've got. Like, they got a serious cast, like, but I don't know. I don't know.
Seems like must be cheap to get them. Like, there's no way they're paying that much money to get these guys, because I just don't see that.
I'm impressed that they got, like, you know, two of the major stars from Ted Lasso to sign on to do them some Garfield. I'm assuming, I don't know, this movie's gonna, I'm sorry, I think this movie's gonna be bad. It's just gonna be bad. And if anybody out there is a hardcore Garfield fan out there, you know, maybe much like, what was it? Not Kate Winslet, but Helen Mirren, whoever it was. No, it was Kate Blanchett, who apparently needed the money. So she did the Borderlands movie. Maybe that's what's going on here. Maybe just Anna Waddington needed, like, a dollar to do a.
What did they recently ask? They asked Maggie Gyllenhaal if she'd be interested in doing a superhero movie, and she said, yeah, I have kids, and they pay a lot of money.
I mean, fair enough, but then she'll end up in something like Madame Web, and no kid will, kids will pay their parents not to go see.
There's,
like,
rumors of Spider-Man 4.
Yeah, but Spider-Man 4, very different than Madame Web 2.
Not happening. Dakota Johnson's shitting on it now, too.
She, on Saturday Night Live, like, hilarious, hilarious stuff. Let's go on to our next trailer, since we're done talking about the Garfield movie that nobody cares about. Aesop, we made jokes about Aesop. He did share a trailer for one of the next animated efforts coming out of DreamWorks titled The Wild Robot. And this is a trailer designed to get you in the feels. Like, that's really, because this trailer doesn't have four words to it in terms of dialogue. All we see is a robot that is crash landed in a forest, learning and bonding with the woodland creatures within the forest, all to a remake of What a Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong before we get to the tail end of this trailer and what seems to be the destruction of said forest. Seems like bad things are going to happen. The Little O'Dowd is in. And if the Little O'Dowd is in, you know what that means. And the Little O'Dowd was like, this looks really interesting. This, and he's like, it feels kind of epic. I think I want to see this. So guess what that means, everybody? I'm going to go see The Wild Robot. And I'm not sad about this one. Like, this isn't a Godzilla X Kong situation. This is very much a yes, I'll go see it sort of situation. I don't understand what you're doing, Tony. Like, how? Why? What are you trying to distract me with?
The wrestling reference.
Yeah. Okay. I will say this: Pedro Pascal, he's doing a voice. Lupita Nyong, doing a voice. Mark Hamill, part of the cast, doing a voice. Catherine O'Hara, I can get behind that. Bill Nye, apparently Ving Rhames is just doing everything. Ving Rhames is like he's voicing Garfield movies. Matt Berry. From What We Do in the Shadows, I love his character in What We Do in the Shadows. By the way, show if you're not watching, you should be watching.
Jackie Daytona, regular human
Jackie
bartender?
Jackie Daytona, he is right. A regular human bartender. Also loves local high school volleyball. And here's the thing, DP. These two guys don't understand it, and they would, Tunney in particular, would fucking love it. Like, I just think he would love it. The Jackie Daytona thing, you would love it. I swear to God, you would. He's just Jackie Daytona, regular human bartender. This movie looks really, really good. DP, you're a scientist. Should we watch what I'm assuming is going to be a Protect the Environment sort of animated film from DreamWorks?
I think so. I mean, I get a lot of WALL-E vibes, you know, from it a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
You know, we're, you know, robot coming in, possibly trying to, you know, I don't know where the Earth or wherever he lands, you know, is, you know, going into destruction, if that's towards the beginning of the movie or the end of the movie. You know, we don't know based on the trailer necessarily. So I think it's going to be try and, you know, save the world from, you know, destruction, whatever case that is. WALL-E's one of my favorites, and these ones where it probably is not a ton of dialogue, I'm going to guess, but, you know, we'll see, you know, from this trailer, it's hard to tell, but I'm definitely a fan of robots and watching, you know, them with the animals trying to save the world or do something. You know, it's kind of cool. I dig it.
Tony, are you, is it kind of cool? Do you dig it?
You should change
your heartless bastard.
You should change the top of your Twitter banner, DP, to I'm a fan of robots. I was thinking WALL-E too. I was like, ooh, you know, like, Ernest goes to jail, Ernest goes to camp. This one's like WALL-E goes to camp, you know, like the forest thing and everything. We take WALL-E from the garbage world and we just put him into the forest. And I was just trying to be funny. It looks really good, actually.
You know, it's been a while.
You really underappreciated it. See, that's how good it was.
Wrong, 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 wrong. Wrong, 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 wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong.
Dave, Tony's done.
Yeah.
Your turn.
He is. Definitely, I feel the WALL-E vibes. A little bit of Baymax thrown in there as well. I got the kind of the eyes and that sort of thing. It felt a lot like that. Yeah, this is going to make you cry. And I think that's, I'm watching the trailer. I'm like, and it, like you said, Pat, it's trying to get you in the feels. And this definitely has all those elements of, they're borrowing from a lot of stuff, you know, woodlands on fire. There's Bambi elements. There's creatures running everywhere. Unlike the Garfield trailer, I'm definitely interested in this one. It just depends on my emotional state and how fragile I am when I want to go and watch this. But, this one looks pretty good.
Yeah, I think it looks really good too. Anytime my 12-year-old sees a thing and is like, "Yup," that's always my barometer. Like, that's what I look for in sort of which way I go and whether or not I watch it and see it through willingly and happily doing it.
He's the target audience, so you got to listen to him, you know? I mean,
right.
Absolutely.
Well, but he's starting to get in that age now where he's starting to get a little too cool for movies like that, right? Like, he, you know, he's 12, he's heading his way into 13. Like, literally approached me 2 weeks ago being like, I'd like to watch some stuff with some more horror to it. I'd like to play some horror video game. Like he's taking a turn, guys. Like something's happening. He's
let him fight the zombie dog in Resident Evil, the first game. He'll appreciate that.
He painted his nails black and he's wearing eyeshadow now. Like he's wearing plain black t-shirts, taking an unhealthy interest in the Joker. I don't know. Something's going on.
So he's basically turned into Ray Cash. He's turned into Ray Cash is what you're saying.
Maybe. I don't know.
And I'm going to play the first Silent Hill. That'll set him straight.
We love you, Ray.
Really, there's a joke there, but I'm not going to do it.
I will say this. The first time you talked about the zombie dog in Resident Evil, I was not ready for zombie dog in Resident Evil when that thing jumped through the window.
Nobody was.
And started chasing.
That's what made it great.
There's a fun, I like watching listicle videos on YouTube. And one of the ones that they did was like, top 10 nope moments in video games, and that for me was like a nope moment. You're walking along, there's no sound at all in this hallway, and then jump scare. I was like, I freaked out and wasted like all of my ammunition shooting that dog, which if for anybody who's played Resident Evil knows, you want to go for kill shots as much as possible if you're going to use your ammo in Resident Evil, because it's finite, and you learn that shit the hard way if you're not careful.
Speaking of those nope moments, because that kind of ties into the next trailer, I did want to ask DP something, or any of you guys, did you ever play that game Fear, F-E-A-R, where like it's like a first-person shooter? There's a part where you're in the sewer, and basically it's Soraya from The Ring is coming at you, and she's coming at you, and the lights go out, and you're just like, fuck, and you just start shooting, you know, and it's like, nope.
Just turn the game off and walk away.
Shooting and then, you know, that's kind of where it ends. Tunny's like,
no. I mean, Tunny being on this podcast is sometimes a nope moment, but you know, that wasn't one of them. Okay, let's head into, we're going to go visit Disney and Pixar. As Disney has gone into this phase of just cranking out sequels to successful IPs, some people love it, some people don't. I actually think the timing of this one is pretty good, as we got a longer trailer for Inside Out 2. There's been a teaser. This was a more fleshed out one. For those of you who don't recall or never saw Inside Out 1, I love this movie. It's actually my favorite Pixar film to watch. I watched it with my kid. I plan on watching this one with my kid. I think any parent who has a child about the age of the main character, Riley, in here, I think it opens up a lot of great doors to talk to your children about managing emotions, normalizing feelings. It's a very, very intentional, well-done film. The first one, it was done with the help of child psychologists and looking for ways to help people understand what's going on in their brain. And this one takes it to a new level, as we have 12-year-old Riley about to turn 13, and new emotions are introduced to the characters that we learned about in the first one. The primary new emotion that seems to be the one that is pushing a little bit of the antagonist role this time around is anxiety, played and voiced by Maya Hawke. I think this movie looks really good. I think this looks like a great follow-up and a natural progression and follow-up to a film. And I think that one of the things that I like about Inside Out and its potential for sequels that is different than a lot of other Disney animated films, where it seems like, well, what's the point of a sequel, is that this does make sense, because it's from a parent's perspective anyway, like you're following this child as they grow up and becomes more and more mature. And so new things enter into their life. And this one, it appears like it's either we're going from like junior high to high school, some sort of transition there. But it just, to me, it was just like, wow, this looks like a great next step video or trailer. The sarcasm in Riley's head was the Little O'Dowd's highlight. Thought that was hilarious. Then started yelling everything back at me sarcastically, and that was annoying. But he's 12, and so that's kind of what I've expected and would assume would happen. But I think this looks great. I think this will be a great movie. I think this will make a ton of money for Disney Pixar. And Disney will get back on track with some hits. Tony, what say you?
Yeah, this looked really good. It looked clever the way they used an introduction of like new primary feelings and emotions that took over the old ones, literally bottled them up. The fact that anxiety used the fear of embarrassment as a bodyguard to insert the plan that they wanted to do. And then even more clever was like the adult emotions reactions on the other side of this too. So it had that kind of appeal of how the kids and adults interact and how things affect you differently as you become a different age. So it was really clever, I thought.
Dave, what did you think?
I think I'm with Tunney on this one. This looks really good. It looks like a natural progression of the first one where, you know, you're basically, it's puberty. It's Inside Out puberty edition. And you get all those kind of emotions that you go through when you're first coming into teenagehood. I too love the sarcasm. That was really well done. Love that. So I think I agree with you guys. I think this is a movie to get Disney Pixar right back on track with a established IP that they know they can build on. And it's a unique concept because it's just something you can keep building on, introducing new emotions as this character gets older. So yeah, this one looks like it's going to be a winner.
Absolutely. I agree with you. DP, your thoughts rounding out Inside Out 2.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where this, you know, story or whatever is very unique from the other Pixar movies or anything, is because it's, you know, it's kind of a real life telling of someone growing up, and it can, I mean, it's 100% relatable to everybody, you know, and works very well, like you said, you know, for a kid watching it and then, you know, kind of learn, looking at it going, oh, okay, this is what the emotions in my head are doing. And then from a, you know, a parent's perspective of this, you know, what the hell is going on type of thing. And it's just very unique and it's really cool. And this is one that can perfectly warrant, you know, sequels, where some of the other ones, like, doesn't necessarily need to be. But yeah, you know, you can go through the entire progression.
We're looking
of
at you, Toy
a child's
we're
life.
At you, Toy Story.
I mean, right. you can pretty much already guarantee there will be an Inside Out 3 at the least.
It would make a lot of sense, especially as, you know, when Riley is in high school or wherever it is. We'll see what happens there. But yeah, it looks really, really good. Okay, last but not least, got our first real in-depth look at the upcoming Amazon Prime series based on the successful video game franchise Fallout. Walter Goggins carrying some water in this trailer. Looks like quite the show. Looks delightfully dark. I tried playing Fallout 3, I want to say. I don't remember. Like one of the Fallouts. I couldn't get into it, which might be a surprise to y'all based on my love of RPGs. But as a show and as a series, not having a lot of context, I did recognize some Easter eggs from the films or from the games in there. I can tell you that it looks good. It looks like a great, if not great, post-apocalyptic sci-fi show. Like if I didn't know it was a video game, it would still be interesting to me to check out as a viewer just based on the premise of what I saw. Dave, you shared this trailer, so I'm going to give you first crack to talk about it. What excites you about this? What did you like that you saw out of this trailer? And what should we expect from this series, Fallout 3?
DP, have you played Fallout. You've played the Fallout games, right?
No. I've been the same place as Patrick. I tried playing them, but they're really not exactly my style.
Yeah, there's elements of multiple games in this trailer. You know, there's stuff from Fallout 1, there's stuff from Fallout 2. There's, like I said, the little Easter eggs, a goddamn Geiger counter going off, you know, and anytime you take a step in the wrong part of the game and you hear that Geiger counter, you know, you're getting irradiated, and it's like, okay, got to figure out how to solve that. But yeah, there's like the no-nose kind of cowboy drug addict. I forget who he is, 'cause I don't remember playing that game, but he's in there. They've got all these elements of just this post-apocalyptic dystopian society where the vault dwellers were thought to have died out long ago. But this is like, there's actually like one vault that it seems to do what it was supposed to do, which is keep somebody alive. But there's so much fertile ground in the Fallout franchise to really tell an excellent story. I still play Fallout 76 to this day, which is a lot of fun when they drop a creature in there that's way beyond your level and you just got to run for your life, that sort of thing. I expect we're going to get some of that in here. But, you know, you look at shows like The Last of Us and Halo, and now you've got Fallout here. So I think we're beyond the stage where you look skeptically at all the video game franchises and say, they always fail, that sort of thing. We're now at the point where like, hey, some of these are really, really good. This one feels like it's going to be that. It's a Prime, Amazon Prime. So, you know, they've not skimped on the details as far as special effects and bringing things to life. So, yeah, it looks like a tremendous show. Lots of so much that they can do with this to really do compelling storytelling. And I'm really excited about this one.
Well, and a lot of, you know, with the games, you know, these days where like they're a lot more prominent and they're a lot, you know, this era of gaming where these things are bigger than life. And this is what people can do for a living in some cases with esports and stuff, like putting these onto a big screen and making like these epic stories that are in the video games and bringing them to a big screen is totally doable now. You know, it's they're a lot more of a long-term storytelling than just, you know, you like Mario Brothers, Happy Mario Day. You know, it's linear to the end and you're done. Like, there's not a lot more depth to it, where these games, you know, you can tell this ridiculous story and it's great for, you know, for television.
And it feels like people are taking this medium more seriously. Like, everything's not a cash grab like it was with the movies like Doom and Uncharted and that sort of thing. Like, they're really looking at these stories as a true storytelling medium with, and it should, it's way overdue. And, you know, like the BioShock, we know that that's coming down the line. That's going to be tremendous as well, we hope. So yeah, everything you said, Dan.
There are no plans for the one that a large sector of fans would like, and that's a Fortnite movie. Epic Games has clamoring for that. Oh, only one on this show, but there's a lot of people that play that game and that have played that game. I don't want to push any buttons too soon, but Zack Snyder has already said he would love to direct a Fortnite movie. So we're on the topic, Patrick. I'm just reporting things, okay?
Oh, well,
no hashtag. No hashtag journalism here. ProWrestlingTees.com/chairshot.
We'll talk about our good friend Zack Snyder after the commercial break. That's what we call a tease. And I think that's a good place to close this up. I'm going to watch this show probably. It's going to be one of those where you're probably going to have to prod me and talk me into watching it the way I try to beg you guys to watch some of the shows that I love, like I might do at the end of this program today, as I got excited over some what you're watching stuff. But it is well time for us to take our first commercial break before we get into our first round of news around the Nerdist. We're going to talk a lot of news today, guys. Just a ton of great news. So make sure you stick around because we got you covered. And I don't want any of you to miss it. It's good stuff. We're good stuff. You're listening to good stuff here on the ChairShot Radio Network, part of the ChairShot.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is your boy Kenny Killer telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
Welcome back into Bandwagon Nerds. Patrick O'Dowd, PC Tunney, TPP, and David Ungar here talking to you about everything nerd. One up for me, indeed. Make sure, if you love what we're doing, head over to ProWrestlingTees.com/chairshot. Invest in a chair shot shirt. Remember, I'm still going to thank you if you're the next person to purchase a Bandwagon Nerds shirt. Heck, I'll throw this in because I bet it's still in the inventory. If you buy one of DP's old show's shirts off of ProWrestlingTees.com/chairshot, there's two of those. There's three options for you all to choose from right now. And we'll thank you. I'll even let DP thank you if you buy one for his now defunct show, which I can't even remember what the name. What was that show?
A winner is you, right?
DP? A winner is you. A winner is you. That is
well, correct. DP, it was nice to have your little mini run back here for a few episodes. Maybe we'll see you in a couple of years.
He's not leaving.
Patrick asked me for a favor to find a soundbite for the show. Jeez.
Hey, you could have said no.
And remember, anyway, kids, each order comes with a free Plat Balazs 2020 t-shirt. Right, Tony?
They're still running for office.
According to Chris, those are already in Africa.
There you go. Here's the thing. I'm sorry if that felt like shade. It wasn't really meant to be shade. So, but what we are going to do, we are going to talk some news around the Nerdosphere. And this first article that I was talking about, this is what I shared with all of you guys. And that was the news this week that Akira Toriyama, Japanese artist and father of the famous Dragon Ball series, passed away. And this probably feels like more of a topic that you would cover on Talk to Keki, which maybe they are going to talk about this because he was a significant figure in Japanese animation. But that's not why I have him on this show, because he's also highly influential in the Japanese role-playing game community as well, as his artwork is the primary artwork for the Dragon Warrior, and then later titled Dragon Quest video game series in Nintendo. And he created an aesthetic that was this like distinct, unique thing that was so different from what you would see out of other typical animation of the time. And that he took his art, and it had a serious yet somewhat cutesy look to it. And it was a style that got emulated and copied over and over and over and over again in video games, and specifically JRPGs, for all the way up until today. Like, I would argue that a lot of Final Fantasy's later looks, not its initial looks, but it's some of its later looks with characters, has a lot to do with Akira Toriyama and the work that he did for Dragon Warrior. There is a fun picture floating around right now from the concept artist for the first Dragon Warrior game, which was on the Nintendo Entertainment System, the 8-bit original, of a slime, an enemy that you were going to run to. And this slime looks all menacing and crazy and bubbly and scary. And Akira Toriyama looked at it and he drew it to look like a teardrop and put a little smiley face on it. And that became the slime look that is like iconic with the Dragon Quest series of video games. And that permeated so much of what we had in video games. And so I felt like it would be remiss to not take a moment and talk about it. I don't know if any, like, I know I'm a big RPG guy. I'm a big JRPG guy. I love playing those types of games. Dave, DP, I don't know if either of you have any connection to this stuff at all, whether it be Dragon Ball or Dragon Ball Z and those cartoons and that animation, or these video games, but just one of the most influential Japanese artists for popular culture over across the ocean. And Dave is pointing at you, DP, so looks like you're going first.
Yeah, not specifically on Dragon Quest, and I wasn't into the Dragon Ball Z, you know, any of that franchise or anything necessarily, but I did enjoy, he had some hand in Chrono Trigger for the Super Nintendo. Yep. As well as one of my favorites, which was Secret of Mana, which was a Square Enix game. And I know that was, I don't know if he, I guess, specifically had a hand in that game, but like you can see those elements of what he built, you know, what he designed, you know, like you said, you know, it gets carted over and definitely reused. And you can see those elements in like all those types of games because they're just so beautifully done. And just that artwork, that design that he builds, just adds like just a ridiculous element to the game on top of, you know, a good story and good RPG fighting. So I definitely have, you know, enjoyed the elements that he put into games, especially in that era of the, you know, the 90s there with the Super Nintendo, because those were some of my favorite RPGs that I like playing.
Dragon Warrior. Holy crap. Man, that game was, I think I told you guys a story. When I was like 16, we were like a few of us, we worked at this grocery store, and my buddy, he lived like 2 minutes away from the store. So we were all working on Dragon Warrior, because this is back before you had walkthroughs and game facts and that sort. So we're all working on this, trying to figure it out. So I would work on it. I'd go to work. My buddy, he would get off or be on a break, like his lunch break. He would go there to the house. He'd work on it for an hour. And this went on for months before we finally beat that game. And The first Dragon Warrior was just phenomenal because it was one of those games that introduced you to RPGs and the elements of everything that's going on and the slimes and, you know, how to build your characters and going from town to town to figure things out. So yeah, I'm a massive fan of the Dragon Quest series. And this gentleman was, you know, the father of all that stuff, or to a great extent.
The thing that's funny as you talk about that first Dragon Warrior game, like, games back then and RPGs back then, they didn't really tell you a whole lot of what you're supposed to do.
No,
either. Like, there'd be like two clues, and one of them would be like the princess was taken somewhere to the east, and the other might be there's a town to the north you might want to check out. Mm-hmm. And the game would just be brutal too. Like, you'd go out into the world, and if you weren't ready, it was dangerous to go alone without a sword. And boy, howdy, would you get down? Would you get wiped out? Like, it was not pretty. That slime would kill you. But I loved it because I was a Dungeons and Dragons kid, and so I was all about it. The spiky haired Japanese protagonist. That's Toriyama. Spiky haired protagonist.
That's classic. That's iconic.
You remember back in the day before the internet and game facts, you know, you'd have to like go to like a GameStop or a local game store and talk with people there and kind of like compare notes to figure out what the hell am I supposed to do next? That sort of thing. So yeah, that's
Nintendo Power.
Nintendo
Power, yes. Subscription.
That helped. Ugh.
And when the map came out for Legend of Zelda,
yes,
that was like, thank God I actually know where I'm going.
So there was that. Was that the Nintendo Power? Was that the book with all the levels to everything, right? A whole ton of games.
Nintendo Power was a monthly magazine.
Right.
And so what Nintendo Power would do was it would give you like the first couple of levels of a walkthrough, but not the whole thing. There was a book, and I remember what you're talking about. There was this book, and it was from like the first round of Nintendo Entertainment System games, and Zelda was one of the ones that was in there that had the map and all the different quests on World 1 and World 2.
So and it had other games as well. There was a whole ton of games.
Yep,
and my uncle was a big video game guy ahead of his time. So, like, you know, when we were kids, imagine your dad being a fan of Nintendo and everything. So my aunt took it to her work and photocopied it and binded it together and gave me the binder when I was a little kid.
That's a good aunt. That's a keeper there, Tony.
That is. That's family right there.
That's a true story.
So, all right. With all that said, I listen to Talk to Khaki because I'm sure they're going to talk about his passing as well at some point if they haven't already. I don't know what their recording schedule is, but I just can't imagine it won't pop up. We're going to raise our ethereal glasses to Akira Toriyama right now and move on to something I've been waiting to talk about because I don't like Zack Snyder. I don't know if you guys know this. Like,
really?
I don't.
No.
I think he's a terrible filmmaker. I think that everything he does is trash. I think that people who want him to be good at what he does try too hard to forgive him, DJ. And very much so. He should die a horrible, horrible Mario death at the hands of a piranha plant, spitting a fireball up his ass while he's being swallowed, slowly chomped down. Anyway. So Zack Snyder was on the Joe Rogan Experience. That's strike one. We're just going to start right there. That dude, man, he's crazy. And he starts talking about how he finds himself in trouble with fans because of his deconstructivist point of view. It's because I care that I want to take him apart. Who is him he's talking about? Batman. And the idea of Batman traditionally choosing not to kill his enemy. And he goes on in this interview to say, Batman can't kill his canon. And I'm like, okay, the first thing I want to do when you say that is, I want to see what happens. And they go, well, don't put him in a situation where he has to kill someone. You're protecting your God in a weird way, right? You're making your God irrelevant if he can't be in that situation. He has to now deal with that. And if he does do that, what does that mean? What does it tell you? Does he stand up to it? Does he survive that as a god? As your god, can Batman survive that? The fuck? Man in Batman shirt. Answer question. That looks like Batman Toy, the future Batman. Isn't that Batman? I don't know. That's the original. Okay, I got you.
One of the original cowls.
Tony showing off his Lego set. What's Zack Snyder talking about here? Is he nuts? Am I nuts? Am I like, this seems like a patent misunderstanding of the character.
He's an idiot. It's that, you know, he's just an idiot. Like, you know, he's like, oh, let's put him in these positions. Well, people, it's what he is in the comics. Like, that's what his character is. Like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, he doesn't kill. Like, yeah, you know, that's who Batman is. That's who Batman's portrayed as, you know, because you want to go with like, well, what if we put him in this situation? Well, no, that's not his character. Like, that's why people are up in arms about this. Like, he doesn't do those things. That's the way he is in the comics. That's the way Batman runs things. Like, that's the stories we tell with Batman. You want to have a superhero who does killings or whatever? Oh, fine. Then start writing for The Boys, or start, you know, do something different. Look at a different superhero then, because that's not who he is. And I, you know, that's why people are going to be up in arms. If you want to change who the character is, then I guess fine, you change it, but then it's not him. That's not Batman. That's I guess that's the whole thing I was thinking when I read this, was like, I don't know what you're doing. Like, no wonder people are up in arms. No wonder people think you're an idiot if you're talking like this, because you're not running the character the way the character is. That's just who he is. You know, you want to say, oh, he gets you where your God is. No. Yeah. This is who Batman is. That's it.
I just want to say, Exhibit A, why Patrick O'Dowd loves DPP so very, very much.
I mean, this is a very
stupidest thing I've ever heard. I don't know.
Dave, you were the one who, when you posted this article to the thread, it made my day.
I did. And I agree with DP completely. I think this is Zack Snyder at his absolute dumbest, because it's like, I want to deconstruct this all. So you want to deconstruct?
I don't know, man. Have you seen Sucker Punch? Sucker Punch is pretty fucking dumb.
This is in there. This is in that realm.
Rebel Moon. Like,
yeah, we'll talk Rebel Moon. Oh,
I'm muting you. You can't share what you're watching.
Okay. To deconstruct the very essence of what makes his character, and whoever said Batman was a god, half of this article sounds like he's talking about Superman, not Batman.
Right.
Superman's the god who you want to worry about. And putting him in a position where he had to kill General Zod. And it's like, I, as a biggest Superman mark in the world, I was like, I'm okay with him doing that there. I understood the circumstances. I understood the stakes. That's one thing. But to sacrifice good storytelling, to deliberately put these characters in situations where they have to break everything that you know about them, is just dumb. That's not good storytelling. That doesn't solve anything. And I mean, some of the other people talking about, well, plenty of people die at the hands of Batman. It's like, look, in any of this stuff, there is collateral damage. You know, Superman battles Zod, tons of people die. It's collateral damage. They weren't trying to kill anybody. Batman kills all sorts of people as collateral damage. It's not that he's trying to. So you can't say, well, they're similar. Like, no, it's apples and oranges. Batman never intentionally kills his enemies. Superman never intentionally kills his enemies. So to sit there and say, well, this is a story I want to tell, just confirms the fact that you have no fucking clue what makes these characters who they are. And your quest to deconstruct and reimagine that is no surprise why these movies didn't do so well. Martha, why did you say that name? Fuck you, Zach.
If you want to make a movie on Prime Earth or Earth Zero, whatever you want to fucking call it, then you guys are absolutely 100% correct. And I know he's not talking about what I'm about to say. And I kind of get, though, like, he wants to artistically stretch the character out. And a lot of people don't want to see it stretched in that way whatsoever. There's no bend for the hardcore Batman fans. But if you want to do this on a different Earth, then do it on a different Earth and at least give people the opportunity to accept the fact that it's not your Batman. It's a different version. It could be an evil version of Batman. It could be a Batman that completely lacks morals. So I can see that, but let's classify it like that then.
Yeah, let somebody know it's a multiverse or something.
Well, hold on, because I want to ask this question honestly. I want an honest answer out of folks. Having a world where Batman can kill or does kill, what does that actually stretch or do for the character that then suddenly makes him unique to any other hero that we know of out there? Because that's the one thing about Batman and why the big problem I have with this statement. And sure, if you want to watch or, you know, learn, you know, go to a multiverse where Batman is a ruthless terrorist killer or whatever, fine. That takes away, in my opinion, what makes him special and makes him so conflicted as a hero. And like there's just no other run of heroes that are so above it. Because that's it, that's his line. And the thing that's amazing about Batman and Bruce Wayne is he comes up with ways where, if used incorrectly, he gonna kill a motherfucker. Like, he could kill Superman. He, like, figured it out, but he doesn't. And to me, that just makes him so much more of an alluring character. I think Batman Who Kills is a boring narrative, to be honest. I think that takes away from the character. Now, if others want to see it, Tony, I absolutely agree with you. Like, go see it. But I am happy not.
I get where you're coming from, but I think if you do make that twist in a different Earth, it also changes the dynamic of how that character interacts with the rest of the Earth. It's not the Batman you think it is. He doesn't hold that place in society. It's almost an evil side of it, right? You're almost flipping the coin completely when you do something like that. So I agree why people wouldn't want to see that on Earth Zero.
Well, there's, if I could, there are stories that like the Injustice storyline, you know, what happens that gets Superman to the point where he kills Batman. You know, there's stuff like the Jason Todd situation. What's gets Batman up to that point where he almost, Batman's even better because he almost crosses the line, but never does. So that's compelling storytelling. What can you do to this character to break them to the point that they are going to break their one rule? Even Heath Ledger says it in The Dark Knight. That's good storytelling, but just to say I'm going to deconstruct them and put them in these situations just because, that's just dumb, in my opinion.
I think my favorite part from this article that I've totally forgotten, I just had it up and saw the line where he's talking about, like, my heroes, you know, everybody say my heroes don't do this or that, and he's like, you're living in a fucking dream world. Oh shit,
really? Fiction is a dream world?
That's the fucking idea, you ugh.
No, it's all grounded in reality. Dark, gritty. It's what we need. All right. Let's,
for the record, I was just trying to play a little devil's advocate, just to, for the record.
No, I know. So. You were trying to get some good podcasting going. I understand how good podcasting works. We're on a good podcast. We know how it works. So that's what we do. Let's get to our last thing. I'm gonna kick this conversation off by just owning that I was okay with the show, but I was never a huge fan of the show. But South by Southwest happened, and there were some comedians there that were doing some interviews, one of whom was Pamela Alden, who is known for voicing the character of Bobby in the Mike Judge animated series King of the Hill, you know, famous with Hank Hill selling his propane and propane accessories. And King of the Hill is coming back. They are going to be doing some episodes on Hulu, and Alden was just talking about how excited they are to work with this revival, that there's a large number of young writers being added to the team, and that it was very impactful to her. She said, quote, "It feels really special. There's a new generation of young writers who are writing the scripts and finding the sweet spots of the classic vintage King of the Hill in a new era. We are very blessed." So apparently it's going to take place in a 15-year time jump. So Bobby will be fully grown. Hank, Peggy, and their friends will be hitting that retirement age. This is done to kind of make people feel a familiarity with the characters, yet they've still grown. I'm having a little bit of deja vu, as if we've talked about this before, but a return of King of the Hill. And what do you think about this idea of new young writers and part of a writer's room? Now, there's no way around all of it. And sadly, we won't get the same voice for Dale, as the person who voiced Dale is no longer with us. They passed away. But Tony, you shared this article. You shared this story. So I'll kick it off to you. What are your thoughts on this King of the Hill reboot and, you know, what sounds like a kind of a new generation of writers as part of the team?
Kicking me right, my fellas. Dirty pool, mister. Dirty pool. Oh, you got it?
Kicking me in, my fellas. Dirty pool, mister. Dirty pool.
Well done. I love this show. It was so freaking good. When I read this, when I seen the headline, and I instantly went in and looked at the article, hoping it was what I thought it was. This is almost what I want for The Simpsons when they decide to stop, is like, how about a trilogy of like 1-hour episodes that could advance The Simpsons story to a close? I'm thrilled that they're updating it. Like, I new scenarios with the same characters, but they've evolved now, right? And we're all familiar with Hank and Bobby and Peggy. John Redcorn, right? Isn't that the whole story going on the other side there? I always loved, you talked about watching shorts on YouTube. There's a funny short about dude watching King of the Hill for the first time, you know, going, oh, you can't tell that that's not your kid. But anyway, I'm really interested to see this one.
Either Dave, DP dropped his mic. Go ahead, buddy.
Yeah. Anything Mike Judge is fantastic. And I love King of the Hill, you know, the Beavis and Butthead type of stuff too. And King of the Hill was such a great show. And I'm loving this. I'm looking forward to seeing that come back. You know, everything like Futurama making the comeback was really good. Like this one I think is gonna be no different. I think I'm good with the idea of them, you know, changing it up with going a little further into the future and, you know, seeing Bobby growing up and trying to deal with more of the grown up situations and everything. Could definitely be fun. You know, is he going to be running in the propane shop or is he going to be doing something different? You know, and it'd be interesting to see how his relationship with Hank and everything continues.
Damn it, Bobby.
Damn it, Bobby.
Dave.
I'm kind of like you, Pat. I never loved the show or hated it or anything. I watched it here and there. But yeah, it's got obviously a big fan base. Tony and DP say a lot of great things about it. And clearly they love the show. So I'm all for more of it. You know, I mean, it's just one of those shows that I haven't spent a ton of time with. Although I will say every time I watch it, I got a chuckle out of it. Absolutely. So, yeah, go for it, guys.
Yeah, it's a fun little show. And we all know currently in entertainment, what's old is new again, right? Like everything's coming back. Everything's getting sequels, extensions, reboots, reduns, reduxes. You name it, we're going to do it. And what we're going to do now is we're going to take our second commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the evil overlords of the entertainment industry, Warner Brothers and Disney. You're listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey folks, PC Tony here. Thanks to our new partnership with Angry Lemonade, you can save 10% on physical products and digital commissions using the promo code CHAIRSHOT. Head to angrylemonade.net to check out their amazing catalog of products and services. Use the promo code CHAIRSHOT to save 10%. That's angrylemonade.net.
Welcome back, everyone, into the home stretch of Bandwagon Nerds. That's right. It's final segment time. Patrick O'Dowd, PC Tunney, David Ungar, DPP, and Puppy. We have a dog. Dog has entered the chat. The dog wants Dave's attention. The dog is not interested in the podcast. The dog is very much interested in Dave. We got Lego Batman bus going on. How can nobody want one of our t-shirts? This is what you get. And all we want is you to go over to prowrestlingtees.com/chairshot and invest in a chair shot shirt. That's what we want from you. Okay, guys. The two evil overlords of the entertainment industry back at it, giving us some news. But this time Warner Brothers and Disney, that's what we're going to talk about. But this time, when we talk about Warner Brothers, we're going to go to the video game side of where Warner Brothers, in a recent Morgan Stanley speaking event, said that going forward, its strategy will focus more on live service, mobile, and free-to-play games. Warner Brothers Discovery gaming boss J.B. Perrette said on the company's future strategy, quote, "We're doubling down on games as an area where we think there is a lot more growth opportunity that we can tap into with the IP that we have and some of the capabilities we have on the studio where we're uniquely positioned as both a publisher and developer of games. Rather than just launching a one-and-done console game, how do we develop a game around, for example, a Hogwarts Legacy or Harry Potter? That is a live service where people can live and work and build and play in that world in an ongoing basis." So I don't know. That's the quote. This is a departure. Let's start here. I'm going to go to our good friend DP. For those that are the uninitiated, what is this guy talking about when he is talking about a live service game where people can live and work and build and play in an ongoing basis? What does that mean?
I think it's more of games you're going to play online, games you're going to play that they can keep adding content to, and continue building on a story and adding something to it. Kind of like, you know, like the Grand Theft Auto game, the way it is now. You know, you go online, they add new stories, they add a new, you know, thing you can play to go through something. You can play with other people. They can just jump in and jump out. And it's just this huge kind of open world where, like, Hogwarts Legacy, you know, was, where you can just kind of go wherever you want, and they have just random different stories you can play and stuff like that, you know, or like a, you know, kind of Minecraft type of thing. You can go in there, build a house, or, you know, do whatever the hell you want and have your friends join you on quests and shit like that. And whereas opposed to just building a new story from scratch or something, you know, year after year, they just have this world and then they can add to it, you know, and continue going on with that kind of type of thing, which I think is fine. You know, it's definitely way a lot of games go nowadays, for sure. And I would say, especially with the recent Warner Brothers types of games, they ain't doing regular games very well anyway. So, you know, focus on something to make your product a little better would be great, because they haven't put out a really good one in a while, to be honest with you, in my opinion.
Well, what's really interesting is Hogwarts Legacy, or Harry Potter Hogwarts Legacy, which was not what they are considering, what are describing as a live service game, was 2023's best-selling title. So literally the game that they're trying to get away with sold better than what they're going to, which I think is really, really interesting. Call me naive. What's the microtransaction game like in the midst of these live service games?
Microtransactions? Like, oh, go ahead, Dave.
Like those, like, buy shit in the game.
Oh, well, I mean, sort of deal. There's a lot of money to be made. I think the whole, and DP can probably echo this, the FTP, free-to-play model, is free in name only. They get you in there, like, and you know, perfect example is the game that the only mobile game I play is Marvel Strike Force. I've been playing that for years, and I told the guys, I think it was last week, that Mephisto was going to be released as part of the game. It's kind of a running joke. He was released, and I sent Ray a picture. I said, look, here is actually Mephisto. But they get you into these games where they bring you up to the point where, you know, it's free to play up to a point, but to get to the next level, you can either sit there and really grind for a long time, or you get to the point and say, I'll invest $5 here and get this piece of gear that I need to push the next thing, or I'll invest something here. And you see that a lot with the games that, like, Warner Brothers is talking about now, like Hogwarts Legacy, like you said, Pat, beat Call of Duty. It's the first time in 15 years Call of Duty was not the best-selling game. So that tells you how great it is. And then they're like, hey, we can add things to this. Like, Final Fantasy, Stranger of Paradise, like the spiritual beginning of the franchise, it's got a built-in story, but then they're like, well, here's Season Pass. I'm like, well, what do I get with Season Pass? Oh, new costumes, new gear, new things. Maybe they'll release some DLC. Yeah, maybe they'll release some DLC along the way. So that's kind of, seems like that's what they're saying, is like, we want to get away from these AAA titles, these great story-bound games, like let's bring out a new Fallout game or Grand Theft Auto 6, which will have elements of that, sure, but there's still the underlying story, and then they just tack on to it. So yeah, I don't understand why you would steer away from a game that just set a sales record for your company and say, yeah, you know, we made a lot of money on that and it was super popular. We want to go in a different direction. The microtransaction subscription-based services. I don't know, man. I think it's a bad idea. But DP's right. With the exception of Hogwarts Legacy, WB hasn't exactly been knocking it out of the park lately.
I mean, you mean Kill the Justice League wasn't a successful video game?
Success is difficult to quantify.
No. I can quantify the success. DP and I both got it the week it came out, like the day it came out. How many hours have you put into it, DP? And this was months ago.
Two.
Yep, me too. There you go. This really feels like a company wanting to combine like a Fortnite, where you don't necessarily have to go beyond the paywall to advance and level up and get things necessarily. You add in that online gaming thing where your success is beyond that paywall, Dave, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. So if you can put the two together and add the open world of a GTA, et cetera, there's your perfect thing that not only is limitless play, but limitless opportunity to capitalize on that as well from a company standpoint.
If you make a good game, because I will say this.
I got
there. Plenty of those out there that their servers are graveyards at this point because their game was shit. it to me, it's a testament of World of Warcraft that that game has lasted as long as it has and has gone through so many iterations as it has.
It's an EverQuest. EverQuest is still going, isn't it?
And to some level. I don't particularly have a problem with that. My biggest problem with some of these games and where they become shitty games is that concept of, like, to advance in the game becomes tedium unless you pay. And that's the thing that sucks. The grind, when the grinding is such that you have to spend days on end to grind because you don't want to spend the $8 for whatever expansion you need to get. Buying new levels, getting new worlds, DLC, like stuff like that, yeah, is great. It's, you've got to find a balance between that and the accessibility to a player to where, yeah, if I don't want to spend $5 or $10 or whatever, I should still be able to get to the thing within a reasonable amount of time.
A very popular example, I played Boom Beach on my mobile device for a long time.
No idea what that is.
It was look it up. It's one of the more popular ones. It's building your own army and conquering the worlds, and you can attack other players. But like you said, I quit after 3.5 years of investing in this game and playing with friends that I knew at work. I just stopped because you couldn't do anything unless you paid, like you said. So,
not fun. All right.
3.5 years.
Any final thoughts? Any other video games that we love to hate before I switch over to Bob Iger?
Lots of video games I love to hate, but you can go on.
By the way, since buying Baldur's Gate 3, I'm up to 80 plus hours on my primary campaign. Plus, I have 4 other campaigns that I've started past the prologue level just to kick up. Here's the best part. I'm 80 plus hours into my primary game. I still haven't actually reached the city, Baldur's Gate, which is the name of the game, because that's how much there is that Larian Studios put into this RPG.
Worst Red Dead Redemption ever.
I was going to say, what is this? The Witcher?
Fucking awesome. I love this game. I'm going to jump onto it after we finish recording.
You got a few months until college football comes out, so get it. You got to time it just right.
Oh, that's true. Well, we will lose you for a while, I think. There's going to be a whole weekend where you don't respond to anything.
When EA puts out College Football 2025, and I purchase it, which I'm going to do, I won't disappear into the nether, and I won't stop playing Baldur's Gate, because here's what happens with me in the NCAA football game. The NCAA football game is just always that warm video game blanket I would come back to. Like, when I'd be like, I don't really have anything new to play. What do I want to play? Oh, let's work on my dynasty. Let's see what happens. Love the warm blanket, the snuggly warm blanket. Ah, NCAA football. Yes, I'll recruit you 5-star quarterback from Florida that would never come to Central Illinois in a million years. Oh God, I can't wait. I want to know how NIL is going to work. I want to know it all. I want it. Give it to me. Give it all to me. But I usually reserve Saturday, my non-recording day, as the video game / entertainment day, because I want to dedicate all my time reasonably to the podcast for the good of the show, gentlemen.
For the good of the brand. Something about it. Somebody named Pat, just, you know, always.
Which reminds me, I will be on next week's show. Oh, sorry. What? That's a joke. Just kidding. I will be on next week's show. I am, just for those of you who are tracking, I am now 34 days away from my next visit with the mouse. So just over a month away from the next Disney World trip, where I will not be doing podcasts. Hey,
rumors are Tiana might be open when you get there, Pat.
I think it's more likely to be open when we go on our September trip.
Yeah.
That's what I'm planning. But anyway,
why don't you just speaking move of out Disney,
because it's Florida.
Humidity.
No, it's by politics. I can't live in
that place. Yeah. Jesus Christ. They probably wouldn't let you in the state and be like, nope, get out.
Let's talk about a guy who is having all kinds of political fights with Florida. That's Bob Iger. Now, Disney's kind of come upon it in a hard way with the box office as of late. Like, their duds have been well-known duds that have flown out there, whether they were earned or unearned. Like, I'll defend the Marvels until I die. That movie did not deserve its fate. It was a great film, and it just seems like everything worked against it. But Bob Iger admitted this week that Disney has strategically killed a few projects. Now, he didn't reveal any specifics, but It does sound like in an effort to get themselves back on track from a box office standpoint, they've made some tough decisions. We could react to the tough decisions part, but more fun for me, what do you think gets chopped out of our beloved IPs that Disney produces? That's more of the question I want to speculate about. Who fucking dies? I'm going to put mine out there first, Blade. I don't think we're ever seeing a Blade movie, guys. Just don't see it happen. But I turn it to the floor. David Ungar, Bond villain Bob Iger said some projects are being rejected and abandoned. Blade. What makes sense to you?
Blade's a good call. Ironheart. I'm a little bit worried about Ironheart right now. That's one that doesn't seem to have a lot of momentum behind it. And they seem to be kind of moving away from the MCU-based shows. I mean, other than Agatha, I know that's coming out, but Ironheart, I haven't heard anything about that lately. No filming updates, no nothing about any of the people involved. So I would be, Ironheart's one that I'm looking at thinking, I'm not sure that actually is going to happen.
Well, but are they focusing on Daredevil?
Oh, sure.
Isn't that really where we are right now, Daredevil 1 again? It is,
but I would expect to hear something. I haven't heard anything about that in a while.
Maybe. DP, Tony, I will go DP.
Any movie that's not a sequel or a non-original story that they're going to cut, or it doesn't have the word Toy Story in it.
Right. Toy Story 37 is coming out tomorrow.
Like, that's where we're going. Like, basically, like, they don't do, like, there's so many that don't do new ideas or anything that it's just, and if they walk to them and say, hey, I got this new idea, nah, you're out. Like, nope, no thanks.
The other two rumors that I was seeing was, Armor Wars and possibly repurposing the Young Avengers.
Oh, that'd be interesting because I've already put that in motion a little bit. Yeah. I would say you're never going to see another Eternals movie either, kids. So those of you who are hoping to see
it. Is anyone here sad about that?
I liked the Eternals.
I want the answer to the end, but I don't really need to see another Eternals movie.
But for that measure, are we going to get a second Shang-Chi movie? I mean, that's got to be on the fence too.
I would hope so. I think Shang-Chi was at least received well enough to earn its sequel. This is the thing where I do agree in the land of comic book saturation and the overly ambitious nature of the MCU post Endgame. What happens with Namor? What happens? You know, we know that Kang is apparently just gone forever. What happens with at the end of the Eternals? There were like three threads left open. Does Blade even happen? Like Doctor Strange and Cleo? Is that going to be a thing for the Multiverse of Madness? Where is it all going? The Vision. I was relieved to hear Paul Bettany say yes. We are going to. Like, it sounds like Vision Quest might still be a go because he was talking about doing like how he was getting ready to do White Vision and that was the thing. Tony doesn't agree, but at least the primary actor is giving an interview and saying that, yes, this is happening. So you've got that. What about Star Wars? Is anything die in Star Wars?
Not Skywalkers.
Oh, apparently not. God, Jesus Christ, right?
He'll be here all week.
I think like if they were dabbling with the thought of Obi-Wan season 2, that might not happen. We know Andor season 2 is happening. We know Ahsoka season 2 is happening. Anything
Mandalorian's a movie.
Yeah, anything like related to the Old Republic phase is probably up in the air.
Do you guys associate though the world of and genre of Star Wars with comic book movie fatigue? Because I don't, and that's why I don't think you're going to see as many cuts on that side.
There's not been as much. Yeah, they haven't been as frequent or as heavy hitting with Star Wars. The problem with Star Wars seems to be that when a director's vision doesn't exactly line up with what Disney wants to do. Thanks for playing, Patty Jenkins. That's what happens there.
Star Wars feels like it's got a different sort of problem as opposed to like Marvel. Marvel superhero fatigue. Star Wars is more like these movies.
Who's our next
these
Luke?
Movies don't. These movies don't move me. Fatigue. You know, the sequel trilogy did nothing for me. That sort of thing. The prequel trilogy I didn't enjoy. So people on the Star Wars side are waiting. Like the shows have all been good.
Right. I've been enjoying the final season of The Bad Batch, but in particular, like I've been watching that with a little guy. Am I the only one who's more than a little worried about how Taika Waititi does with the Star Wars trilogy?
Like, no, you're not the only one.
Okay, because I'm not feeling great about that at all. And maybe it's just because I have such a bad taste after Thor, Love and Thunder. But man,
I'll be the villain.
I'm sorry, man.
I'll be the villain. I was entertained by Thor, Love and Thunder, and I'm not worried about it.
I'm not worried about another Thor movie. Thor's not going anywhere.
How does Taika strike a balance between like the complaints we had about Thor, which was too much Taika and too much of that humor, and the whole Star Wars universe, which really doesn't lend itself to that sort of storytelling? Like Thor Ragnarok, yes, he got that absolutely right. That's a perfect balance of that. Star Wars doesn't lend itself to that sort of environment that much, does it?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It takes itself very seriously. That's a challenge.
Taika strikes back.
DPU, what do you think, buddy?
I was going to say exactly what Dave said. You got to find that balance, because Taika Waititi definitely has that comedic style to him that can really overwhelm things. And
right.
It's great for certain things, but like, yeah, it doesn't necessarily fit quite right in the Star Wars universe. It doesn't, you know, it's not the same. So you got to make sure you get that balance really right. You know, he can definitely tell a good story and definitely can do it great, but you got to make sure you keep that, you know, comedic side of it a little just toned down.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I'll be really interested to see what actual projects don't make the cut. I have long been a proponent of the Marvel slowdown. And I think, you know, for us, we've been really focusing on Marvel, but you know, X-Men 97 comes out in a couple of weeks. And you know, it's an animated series. I'm very excited about it. I don't know if it's going to be a standalone or if it fits or it doesn't fit. We'll find out. There's good things on the horizon, in my opinion, with the Kingpin. So, you know, we just got Echo, and we're getting Daredevil. So there's still a lot going on. It'll just be interesting to see what threads they decide to let go. So we'll see. All right, let's head into our final segment of the show, something we've been doing for quite a little while now, where we ask the panel, what you watching? So DP, one, congratulations on catching up on Invincible. Good to know. Two, what you watching?
Yeah, did a good fast super binging of Invincible, which was phenomenal. So if you can't tell, I've been sick, and the Dillinator has also been sick. So we spent literally all day yesterday after taking care of my parents. We did 9 straight hours, The Last of Us.
Nice.
Watched the entire season 1. It was fantastic.
Thank you, DP.
Great. And as someone who never played the game, that was another one of those instances where you didn't need to play the game to appreciate what that show was. So hell of a show. Love it. Bravo to HBO. Deserves all of the accolades.
DP, I got
to
ask you, the opening scene of The Last of Us, the 1968 talk show, is that one of the most powerful things you've ever seen?
That was very interesting. Yeah, that was really cool. Really well done, talking about the different types of diseases that can take over the world. It's like, oh,
just
shit, like, this could
just
happen.
Just like where the guy says, if the world just gets a little warmer, and then how everything changes at the moment he says that.
That's the only scene I've actually seen of that series. And then they shortly try to kill the dog, and I turned it off and never turned it back on.
I know. It's you know what? Just skip that part and then get back to it. That's
save yourself 15 seconds and get back to the show.
You need to have your heart broken the way that we've had our heart broken watching those characters go through what they went through. Tony, what you've been watching, buddy?
Ricky Stenicki, the new John Cena on Prime. It's funny. The start is a little bit slow. It didn't need to be an hour and 55 minutes, but it's worth the watch when you have the time. Don't watch it with the little O'Dowd, Patrick. But you guys would truly appreciate it. Andrew Santino, Zac Efron, William H. Macy is in here and does a phenomenal job as well. Yeah, there you go. So that kind of, for some people, the fact that he's in there gives it slightly more credibility, but a lot of laughs in that one. A lot of laughs. Ricky Stenicki, Amazon Prime.
Very cool. Very good. Dave, I know you watched at least one movie that you shouldn't have.
I did finish Rebel Moon Part 1.
My condolences.
Like I said, the climactic battle at the end was very good. I really enjoyed that part. But man, the flagrant just stealing of stuff from, I mean, at the end, they even fucking wedge in the creation of Darth Vader with some more Harry Potter. And it's like, what the hell's going on here? yes, I'm going to watch part two because there are elements I like and I'm curious to see what happens, but it's not a good movie. I don't think it's as bad as everybody says, but it's not good either.
Oh no, it's as bad as everyone says. It is.
Speaking of stealing, did you guys see the rumor that The Holdovers was plagiarized from like a different writing? No. Look that story up if you'd like to see. It's nominated for an Oscar, and it literally, there's a story out there on that. Check it out.
Ooh, drama.
I have still watching Halo season two, which is excellent. Really enjoying Halo season two, and I started watching Full Swing season two. I told Tunny that the first episode, tremendous. Gotta love Rory McIlroy, man. That poor guy's been through the ringer on this show. So here's to you, Rory.
Very nice. Very nice. I randomly decided that I wanted to watch the Kill Bill movies. So I've watched Kill Bill Volume 1. I have Kill Bill Volume 2 up in the hopper. I finally started the show. We did the show on the trailer park, and I wanted to, I remember when I did it on the trailer park, I talked about how I wanted to see it. So I limited run series on FX titled Shogun. It's three episodes deep. It's airing on Hulu and FX. It is a story that takes place in feudal Japan, and it follows primarily an Englishman pirate slash traitor who is there. His ship and his crew, or what's left of his ship and crew, crash on in Japan. They are found by one of the local fiefdoms, and he's trying to make his way. Meanwhile, there's these five clans that are all vying for control of the island and the larger land. One of these fiefdoms, the one where the ship has crashed, is under threat from the other four, led by a kind of main antagonist. But they now have this shipwreck that is loaded with gunpowder, muskets, and cannons. So I'm sure nothing's going to go wrong with this element introduced into feudal Japan. It's all going to be fine. The British dude is not going to be a problem. It's going to be okay.
Can I give you some news on Shogun, by the way, that you're not going to like?
What?
Forbes.com yesterday reported that Justin Marks on the idea of a second season said, we're just not doing it. It would go beyond the source material.
No. Yeah, it's based on a book and it's a limited series. Like, I knew that going in. I eyes wide open there, bro. So I'm excited for the story they're telling me. The premiere episode was an hour and 40 minutes like of TV time. So you are getting your money's worth on these eight episodes. So I was randomly on Max looking for something to watch, and I stumbled upon an Adult Swim. This is an anime, Tony, so you can just, you know, turn your brain off. You're not gonna Japanese animation. Sure, you're not gonna be down. But there's a new Adult Swim series called Ninja Kumi. Kumi is Japanese for the word god or authority. So ninja god, and it's a revenge tale of a ninja who left his clan with his wife at the time, who was also a ninja of that clan, his wife and child. As people who left the clan, they are now being hunted by the clan, as anybody who leaves the clan is considered a liability and must be eliminated. They kill his wife and child in the first episode, and it is now flipped into a revenge story. It's been five episodes. That's episode one. You'll be okay. But the animation is awesome. The action is crazy. It's that beautiful blend of action and science fiction elements that anime is known for. And I've been here for it. The thing that I've been struggling to figure out is, because it's an Adult Swim show, it's trying to figure out like when it's actually airing. But they're putting the new episodes up on HBO Max on Sunday, so that tells me it's airing on Saturdays. Check it out if you're interested in that. It'll be good stuff. Anxiously awaiting X-Men 97. Excited to get back into Invincible. The Boys is coming around the corner. Gentlemen, there's a lot going on. And even more so, next week, we start a whole new special kind of project. I got a message, a DM, not too long ago from our good friend Ray Cash, asking me what I thought about this. And he sends me four screenshots. And Ray, apparently for the last couple of years, has had this burning thing in his mind of doing an NCAA tournament style hero versus hero March Madness event. And so I looked at it. Ray said he wanted to do it. I said, that's a great way to bring you back on the show, even if it's for a little while. So starting next week, Superhero March Madness begins. Ray has done a lot of hard work on this. He's created regions. We are going to go region by region. We're not going to do 64 or 30, it'd be 32 matchups in one episode. Like, yikes. We're going to parse it out. Our March Madness is going to be like March, April, May Madness as we slow things down just a bit, at least in the early rounds, to bring things more reasonable so that this podcast doesn't make Greg DeMarco sad. But that is coming next week. Week one, the returning Ray Cash brings us his Superhero March Madness. I can't wait to check it out. I have a look at the brackets. I had some issues with some of the seeding, some seeding questions there. But, you know, that's the problem with the committee. When you leave it on the committee, there's going to be some people who are overseeded or underseeded. And you just got to deal with that. You got to deal with it.
Ray puts Superman as a 16 seed. Get out of here, Ray.
If you're going to win in March, you got it. You got to overcome your seeds. That's what it is. Seeding. That's what it takes. So we'll see how that goes. And last but not least, guys, the Oscars, as we record this tonight, the Oscars are tonight. There'll be a lot of big stuff going on. Real quick around the table, for those who care, who should win, who will win Best Picture and the Oscars? PC Tunney, you just threw up your hands and like, yeah.
I've been shouting NIAID for months since I've seen it, so I'd love to see them take NIAID home award. I think the main man from Oppenheimer is going to win. I can't think of his name right now.
Cillian Murphy.
Yes, should win as well. It should be a fun night. I like that they're starting it earlier. How about that?
Yes, 1,000%.
Right. WWE moved to Saturday nights. The Oscars moved a little earlier. Can we get the Super Bowl on a Saturday? Amen. Hallelujah. Holy shit, where's the Tylenol?
DP, anybody you want to see win an Oscar tonight?
I don't think I have anybody that I prefer. I watched Poor Things, actually. That was another one I did watch.
It's on Disney Plus, guys.
No. Is it really?
It is. Disney owns it. Yeah.
I got to check that out.
Have you watched it?
Yeah, it's really sexual.
It's on Hulu. I know that much.
Yeah. Really sexual. If you ever want to see Emma Stone, you see Emma Stone.
You're going to see all of Emma Stone.
2 hours. It's weird. It's a very weird movie.
All right. I take it back. It's on Hulu. It's not on Disney.
Oh my God. I was like, there's no way. Like Disney Plus. Oof.
Dude.
That is as close to an adult film as you could get.
But you guys got to remember, Disney Plus started putting R-rated content and NC-17 rated content on the streaming service. You can watch the incredibly violent and sexual Daredevil series from Netflix. You can watch Deadpool 1 and 2. Like, you have parental restrictions you're supposed to put on stuff, but it's okay. It's on there now. Go ahead.
Does it give Eyes Wide Shut vibes?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I think it's, yeah. It was definitely not what I was expecting to watch. That's for sure.
It's what I heard.
Dave.
From being down in LA or like right in Hollywood, right next to the Chinese Theater or wherever they're doing the Academy Awards this year. They do it every year, but kind of like driving around that area, seeing all the people there. I got a real vibe that Killers of the Flower Moon is going to do very well tonight. That seemed to be really positioned very prominently in a lot of notable spaces. So I'm kind of going with that in the direction of Killers of the Flower Moon to win Best Picture. But, you know, hopefully nobody gets slapped. Hopefully no one talks about Madam Web ever. And, you know, we'll be good.
I think Lily Gladstone wins her Oscar. I think that's almost a lock. It's between her and Emma Stone. But I would be shocked. But don't forget, Dave. You act as if the Academy likes Martin Scorsese movies. They don't. They like one.
I'm just saying the feel, that general, those three blocks right around where they're doing it had a lot of Killers of the Flower Moon sort of.
Well, that's a production. That's a production company pushing their show. That's advertising. That's not the Academy. Yeah. I think it's Oppenheimer's. I think it's Oppenheimer's Oscar to lose. I think it's Christopher Nolan's director Oscar to lose. I think we're going to hear Oppenheimer get announced as best picture this year. Though I do think Killers of the Flower Moon is deserving. I think Poor Things is deserving. Either of them, it wouldn't necessarily surprise me. But I'm planting my flag on Oppenheimer. So there's that.
Let's see how these predictions come to roost as we record just hours before the start of the Oscars,
and
right?
I am Ken. Tomorrow, I am Ken is going to win.
Over our faces.
I am Ken's going to win Best Original Song, right? I think that's a lock.
Possible.
Sure.
Okay.
Work for Blame Canada. That's sure. That's certain. The Academy doesn't do silly. Like, and at its roots, like, whatever. Anyway, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Before we get out of here, gentlemen, let's do a quick once around. Remind everybody where they can find you on the socials and on the Chair Shot Radio Network. This week, let's start with David Ungar.
Well, PC Tony's got the dry erase board to like prompt us and remind us as to what we're going to say. Can you get that graphic up? That's right. It's perfect. You can find me on the platform affectionately known as Twix by some of us at Attitude Ag. That is at Attitude AGG. Facebook.com/attitudeofaggression, attitude of aggression, all one word, at Threads and Instagram. And I don't even know who to send hate tweets to at this week. Send it to Tunney. Okay. At PC Tunney. He loves that shit. Why do you want to send it to you, Tunney?
No reason at all. I just thought I could take it for a week. It's like volunteering for slop on Big Brother.
Send it to you? Fuck myself.
No.
Well, so if you're receiving the hate tweets, tell everybody how to send those hate tweets and where to find you.
I just continue to listen to everything Chair Shot Radio Network, and maybe there's a possibility that in the near future we add a visually aesthetic element to the network.
Not if Dave's still on the podcast.
Me.
DP.
Hey, number one Chair Shot over the world. Follow me all over the world by social media interwebs. That it's me, DPP, and you can also listen to me on the DWI podcast every Friday morning at Podcast DWI on the X-Force and Facebook.com/DWI podcast.
I meant to tell you guys, by the way, my Twitter handle got read on another podcast. Cause I was, the number one chair shot villain I commented on a question that a podcaster asked, and he read my answer and he was like, at Chair Shot Villain says, all right, says number one chair shot villain. I was like, nobody knows what that is but me. But we were on a sports podcast, surprisingly or not surprisingly, surrounding Illinois basketball. But that has nothing here nor there. What you can do is you can follow me on the X Twitter at Wrestling Realist. Is at WRESTLNGREALIST. You can also follow the show at Bandwagon Nerds on the X Twitter as well. You can listen to me right now every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday on the Chair Shot Radio Network. You know three of the four, but make sure you give me and PC Tony a listen on Thursdays as we talk all things college basketball on the Pick and Roll podcast. Couldn't do it last week because I had to watch Illinois lose to Purdue, and then Tony couldn't do it because he had to watch his beloved Marquette Golden Eagles lose to UConn. Both of us came out losers in the deal. It's okay. We'll be back this week. We're going to talk some mid-major conference tournaments. Some major conference tournaments are coming. We got All-American teams to talk about. There's some tons of shit going on in college basketball. We're going to talk about that. So make sure you catch that. But that is going to do it for this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Now get yourself out of the basement. Get some sun. Go watch the Oscars. Play a little Mario. Do something good with your time. It's going to be awesome. You're going to have a beautiful day. You have been listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chair Shot Radio Network, a part of the ChairShot.com. Hey, don't miss out on what you're passing. You're missing the Huda of the funky Buddha, a looter of the fucked up styles to get wicked. So come on as I
To them, you're just a freak. Like me. They need you right now. When they don't, they'll cast you out. Like a leper. See, their morals, their code. It's a bad joke. I'm dropped at the first sign of trouble. They're only as good as the world allows them to be. I'll show you. When the chips are down, these civilized people, they'll eat each other. See, I'm not a monster. I'm just ahead of the curve.
First, dude.
You have all these rules, and you think they'll save you.
It's in control. I have one rule.
Oh, then that's the rule you'll have to break to know the truth.
Which is?
The only sensible way to live in this world is without rules. And tonight, you're gonna break your one rule.
I'm considering it.
No, there's only minutes left. So you're gonna have to play my little game if you want to save one of them.
Yeah?
You know, for a while there, I thought you really were a dent. The way you threw yourself after her.
Look at you go!
Does Harvey know about you and his little bunny?
Where are they?
Killing is making a choice.
Where are they?
Choose between one life or the other. Your friend, the district attorney, or his blushing bride-to-be.
You have nothing. Nothing to threaten me with. Nothing to do with all your strength.
Don't worry. I'm going to tell you where they are. Both of them. And that's the point. You'll have to choose. He's at 252nd Street, and she's on Avenue X. That's just a look.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.